I've been attempting, getting there, to complete covering all the verses from Canto 3, Canto 1, Canto 2. So, the section we'll be reading from this morning is Canto 3, Chapter 12, entitled Creation of the Kumaras and Others. And we'll go from verses 48 to the end of the chapter, 57. I think that's the number. And for those of you that are not so familiar with how this canto is laid out, Canto 3 begins, first chapter is Vidura's pilgrimage, after he was insulted, because the chapter begins, the whole canto begins with the sages headed by Shonaka saying, you narrated before that Vidura went on pilgrimage after he was insulted by Duryodhana, and he heard from great sages, and especially he heard from Maitreya. Could you give some details, please? Where did he go, and what did he hear from Maitreya? I'm sure it was a fantastic conversation, because Vidura's way up there, and Maitreya's way up there, and so... You got a recording of that? What did they say? What was the dialogue? So, Shonaka Sutta says, sure, I'll tell you. Describes the pilgrimage. And describes before Vidura's discussion with Maitreya how he got to that place. He was on pilgrimage. He went to Prabhas Kshetra, which is near Dwarka, where Krishna departed. And it was after Krishna departed, so he knew that Krishna departed. And then he went further and further, and he went to a place where Uddhava, after Krishna's departure, was following what Krishna told him to do, which was to go to the place of the Naranarayan Rishi followers and take their association and share with them what you've heard from Uddhava Gita. So he was being sustained by that instruction of Krishna. And lo and behold, while Vidura was continuing his pilgrimage in a forest of Vrindavan, Uddhava, Haribol, you know, what are you doing here? How nice to see you. And then he started asking all these things about Krishna, because you see Uddhava, you think of Krishna. And Krishna, although he knew that they had already departed, he didn't disclose it. He just asked. And then after asking, Vidura went into a swoon of intense feelings. Just hearing Krishna's name and feeling separation from Krishna and couple of chapters of Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And then, literally, similar to Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Vidugta Madhava Lita Madhava, Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna leaving Vrindavan, in Krishna's pastime. So just, it's a chronological narration of Krishna's pastimes, because this is Katiyantas Chamam Nityam. This is what devotees do. Devotees like Uddhava. So, when this narration was concluded, Uddhava said, I have to go now, because this went on all night long. Early morning, I have to go now. Krishna gave me some service. But Krishna said, just before he left, soon you're going to meet Vidura. Just before Krishna departed this world, he remembered Vidura. So tell Vidura to go take instruction from Maitreya. And Uddhava got up and left. And say, you'll find Maitreya over that way. So, intense feelings. This is when you're attached to Krishna, get ready, because there's intense feelings. Intense feelings both of sorrow, because Krishna's departed, he's not going to see him again, and affection, because just before Krishna left, he thought of me. I feel so connected to Krishna, even he's departed. So these two opposite feelings. And off he went to find Maitreya. He found Maitreya. There's this wonderful exchange between the two. They're both exalted souls, but Maitreya had become a perfected soul from hearing from Krishna. And Vidura is going to become a perfected soul by hearing from one who heard from Krishna. So there's this mutual, not backpatting, just genuine appreciation for one another's qualification, and Vidura submits a number of questions, and that leading part of the question of all things to ask, he asks about creation. Now, if you had a chance to meet Maitreya, and you can ask anything at all, is that what you're going to ask about? Like, you know, go to the Bhagavatam, I want to read about creation and all the details and complicated thises and thats. So, why did he ask that? He could have asked, you know, tell me about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. He could have just gone right there. But he didn't. And it's not that he didn't know the information. He is a highly elevated, learned personality. He's Yamaraj. He's one of the 12 Mahajans. Yamaraj is one of the 12 Mahajans. He certainly knows. But he wanted to hear more than information. He wanted to hear what we should be wanting to hear. The mood of devotion from one who knows the information. That's what he wanted to hear. He wanted to connect with Krishna because very important, not minor, it's major important, to understand the world around us in relation to Krishna will help us remember Krishna without all the details. There's several places in Bhagavad Gita, several places in the Bhagavatam. It's the first thing that Shukadeva Goswami speaks about in Canto 2 is the universal form and how to see God within the world around us. Or, I like Sariputta's way of putting this, the way we view the world has a significant impact on how we view ourselves. Cool. The way we view the world has a significant impact on how we view ourselves. So if we don't say it negatively, if we don't understand the world around us, we're going to be in La La Land. We're going to be identifying with the temporary and not really understanding who we are if we don't understand the temporary's connection with the source of the temporary. So then it's, if you just like, okay, notionally, everything comes from God. I got it. But we don't live that way. God's property. We don't live that way. So, the Bhagavatam lays out in the third canto details and details enough to like make your head spin. Details and details of the process of what Vishnu does. Okay, these are two of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. Sarga, what Vishnu does for creation, And this sarga, what Brahma does to assist Vishnu in creation. So the sarga and this sarga are described in mind-spinning detail. And then the section that we're reading here in chapter 12 is, after creation, you got to fill up the place. It's not just, you know, house. It's, you know, people living in the house. So, like, developers, they don't have to worry about who's going to fill up the house. They just build the house. And they get the materials from where they get the materials from. They get their education, how to do it from, etc., etc. But Brahma's got to do much more than that. He's got to fill it up. The whole universe. So he starts filling it up. But before filling it up, there's elements of how to support the living entities, especially the human form of life, how to restore Krishna consciousness, how to restore original consciousness, because going way back to the process of creation, that's one of the principal motivations or contemplations, icha, desires of Vishnu, is to provide a situation where conditioned souls can become freed from their conditioning. So you have to have some resources for that. You're not just going to stumble on it, or I want to get out of here, it's crazy. It doesn't work like that. There's descending knowledge, so he manifests all this, many, 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 many things. And I'm just going to read text 47, that's the previous text, before you start with 48. Brahma's soul was manifested as the touch alphabets. His body as the vowels. This is now the Vedas. Shabda Brahman. His body as the vowels. His senses as the syllabant alphabets. Of course, I don't know so much about Sanskrit technical things, but these are different parts of Sanskrit. His strength as their intermediate alphabets, and his sensual activities as the seven notes of music. Now these are parts of the Vedas that within, you know, in without going into it, grammar, teacher, those who teach, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai Pandit, taught grammar, and also Nyaya. That's just parts of the Vedas. And I've just been listening to Prabhupada describe the study of the Vedas in this age of Kali. It's not possible because people don't have the qualification. But in previous times, the study of the Vedas, before you could even study the Vedas, you needed all of this rigorous training. And then Upanayana, then initiation into the Gayatri Mantra, before you can even begin studying. So only Brahmanas during Vedic times had that training. Kshatriyas, not the same rigor. They were expected to know the Vedas, but they would hear from the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas knew all these rules and and that's just to, through intellectual acumen, access the meaning of the Vedas. We're going to hear shortly about those that are following the path of Gyan. Generally, the highest position they can reach is impersonal Brahman. And generally, they aren't interested in impersonal Brahman. That's hot air. They're interested in the pride and prestige of being learned persons, and then they interpret the Vedas in any way they choose. That's the modern degradation. But the qualified brahmanas, so they, all these things that Brahma is manifesting, like those of you that, so there's some devotees that study classical music, how to perform vocal and keyboard and other, and all this stuff is what you have to learn. But what's the purpose of all this stuff? What's the purpose of anything that's in the Vedas? What's the purpose of the Vedas? To know Krishna. So these are resources that Brahma is manifesting to help living entities that he's going to fill up the universe with, at least the human species, the Aryans, those who know the higher purpose of life. These are resources to help them. You have an interest in this and that and the other thing, and here's how it'll take you to Krishna. Then text 48. Brahma is the personal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the source of transcendental sound, and is therefore above the conception of manifested and unmanifested. Brahma is the complete form of the absolute truth, representative, and is invested with multifarious energies. Srishti Shakti, he's a Shaktivesh avatar and a Guna avatar, both. Purport. The post of Brahma is the highest responsible post within the universe, and is offered to the most perfect personality of the universe. Sometimes the Supreme Personality of Godhead has to become Brahma when there is no suitable living entity to occupy the post. In the material world, Brahma is the complete representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and transcendental sound, pranava, comes from him. He is therefore invested with multifarious energies from which all the demigods like Indra, Chandra, and Varuna are manifested. Note, some of these personalities, they're the sons of Kashyapa and Aditi. But Kashyapa and Aditi, they're instruments of Lord Brahma, who is an instrument of Vishnu. So here he's getting the credit for being the source of them. His transcendental value is not to be minimized, even though he exhibited a tendency to enjoy his own daughter. That's previously discussed. There is a purpose for the exhibition of such a tendency by Brahma, and he is not to be condemned like an ordinary living entity. I'm going to read the next verse in purport, and then we'll go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Thereafter, Brahma accepted another body in which sex life was not forbidden, and thus he engaged himself in the matter of further creation. Purport. In his former body, which was transcendental, affection for sex life was forbidden, and Brahma therefore had to accept another body to allow himself to be connected with sex. He thus engaged himself in the matter of creation, his former body transformed into fog, as previously described. A little complicated. In this chapter 12, in the early stages of creation, one of the entities produced, not with the assistance of Saraswati, his wife, but just from the body of Brahma, came Vak. Vak means the power of speech. And Vak, like the Vedas, is feminine. So it was his daughter And Brahma became attracted to his daughter. That's not so good. It's worse than not so good. But he was attracted to his daughter, and he started pursuing his daughter in the wrong way. And he had some other sons, and one of those sons was laughing at him. And he had some consequence for laughing at Brahma. Brahma checked himself. He gave up that body. That body became fog. And now we're hearing, it's not like chronological sequence of events, but he's now accepting another body that didn't have that restriction. And Prabhupada's explanation, very succinct, is he's not an ordinary living entity. And there was a purpose in his doing what he did, not like, hey, I think I'll go chase my daughter, that's a good purpose. But some purpose of the personality of Godhead, because Brahma is such a qualified person. If there isn't such a qualified person, we hear interesting language here, complete manifestation of the personality, the absolute truth. So, but the instrument is wielded by the hand of the person moving the instrument. So Brahma did what he did. The explanation of why isn't given, but like Arjuna became bewildered and threw down his bow and God, Krishna shall not fight and my body is trembling. And so that illusion of Arjuna is not like ours. It's purposeful. So, apichet sudharacharo bhajate mam ananyabhag sadhu eva samantavya. This important verse. Arjuna's bewilderment and Brahma's bewilderment are purposeful, and one should not think of Brahma as an ordinary person. I heard the recording of one morning walk conversation. Prabhupada was being asked by a disciple. I don't recognize the voice. Prabhupada, why did Brahma chase his daughter and he stole Krishna's calves and cowherd boys? And we're supposed to look up to him as the head of our sampradaya. And Prabhupada, how do we process this? And Prabhupada's, he was angry. The tone was a tone of anger. And he said, he's pure enough. He didn't say too much. He's pure enough. He is a little bit, you know, I don't know the circumstance, I don't know the person, I don't know anything about why Prabhupada responded that way instead of how he's doing here. Can give a, you know, an explanation. There's a purpose for his doing both of those things, to instruct us. That's what a complete manifestation of the absolute truth serving as an instrument of the Supreme Lord would do, whatever he wants. But it's not an ordinary. And, you know, we shouldn't liken ourselves, well, my attraction for my daughter is, it's okay because Brahma did it. The methods of cheating are many, but our regard for Brahma should be as stated here. A couple of details. One is, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very Tamal Krishna Maharaj-ish in his absorption in anything he did. So one of the things he did is he became very interested in Brahma Samhita, and he made an unpublished, yet unpublished, expanded commentary on Brahma Samhita, each one of the prayers. The whole text. Can't remember. But when it comes to Brahma, boy, did he research. And it's not just these two options, A or B. Brahma is the superlative, so one place Prabhupada says, perfect execution of Varnashram Dharma for 100 lifetimes. Try to live an hour. Or a day, or a year. 100 lifetimes. Flawless execution of Varnashram duties. Another is, if there isn't such a qualified person, Krishna comes himself. And there's, I can't remember all of them right now. One of them is, one may become Brahma in the next life. Not ready to go back to Godhead or any other thing, he may become Brahma again. You know, to be the qualified person to be Brahma. Anyway, there's scriptural references to cite each of these. So there's different cycles of yugas. And there's different lifetimes of Brahma. There are different Brahmas, there are different universes. So there's many, many, many options. Something like 6 or 7. But that's Tamal Krishna Maharaj, deeply researched. And the comment to keep things simple for the audience of the world, because that's who Prabhupada is addressing, these two positions. Krishna himself, how often? I've never heard how often. Because Brahma's a really responsible post. Really qualified person. So, main thing is we shouldn't think of him as ordinary. That's the main thing. And he went on for the purpose of creation. That's what the concluding section of the chapter says. Let's go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary for text 48. This verse shows that Brahma has extraordinary powers as a manifestation of the Lord. His body is composed of the Vedas. Shabda Brahma. The Supreme Lord, Para, appears as the worshipable object in the form of Brahma, whose body is the Vedas. Manifested as external sound, Vaikhadi, and the unmanifested sound, Om. That Lord is also manifested as Brahman, the object of impersonal gyan, and as Bhagavan, the object of pure personal knowledge, filled with many shaktis. Since Brahma is non-different from the Lord, it is understood that he has not been contaminated by approaching his daughter. And then text 49, which we also read, Vishwanath, giving up his previous body, which became mist and darkness after desiring Vak, Brahma accepted another body without pollution of forbidden acts of lust. This Shabda Brahma body remained with Brahma at all times. No explanation. So don't ask me what it means. He's empowered. And his body is a body of Shabda Brahma. And he manifests things. He has received those things, and he's just manifesting those things because he's got an important service to do. Intelligent design folks speak about the information content within RNA and DNA strands. And they quote Bill Gates saying there's more information in these RNA DNA strands than any information we can store in a computer. The technology is unknown. And to produce the computers, we need like a big number of smart people to produce the ability to store information in our computers. So inductively, whoever produced those RNA and DNA strands has got a big intelligence. So genetic engineering has tweaked this and that and da-da-da-da-da. But where did the original intelligence to produce the strand come from, if it takes scientists to tweak through genetic engineering and do this and that and whatever they're going to do? Make better corn because you get genetically modified corn. It's better than the ones that Brahma created or whatever they're up to. But giving credit where credit is due, the intelligence that Brahma has is in anything you can think of, without exception. He knows it. He knows how to bring it to being. He knows how to keep it going. He knows, you know, he's super professor. But not just information capacity, but he's pure. 100 lifetimes of flawless execution of varnashram duties. He's perfectly pure. And incredibly qualified. So when Prabhupada would make challenges, because he had that conviction, when he would make challenges to the scientists, it was the foundation of it was rooted in knowledge of the Vedas. He didn't have to be. He said, I don't have to become a scientist to challenge the scientists. He wanted his scientist disciples to challenge the scientists in the language of the scientists, but rooted in knowledge of the Vedas. Like life comes from life, and so, you know, you can't create life. And in so many examples. It's just calling the scientists fools, in like children. Big bang. Chunk explodes. Now you have existence. And then existence evolves, chemical evolution. Then so he would, anyway. Several times in recorded conversations, lectures, Prabhupada would give credit to Darwin and then give discredit to Darwin. He said, the idea of evolution is right in Padma Purana. And he would recite the verse. But it's not that life evolves from chemicals. That's his speculation. And life doesn't evolve from chemicals. And the first created being is not, you know, some amino acids get together and have a party and create a one-cell, you know, entity. And then from that comes evolution. The first created being is Brahma, and he does the rest. Doesn't it make sense? And, you know, the other doesn't make sense. Nor is there any evidence. It's just a speculation. So, credit to Darwin. he stole some information from Padma Purana and gave himself credit for it. But then the other part, discredit, because... Anyway. Prabhupada quotes that Darwin, in some conversation with another scientist, said, the chemical evolution aspect is my speculation. With the declaration that as science becomes more evolved, we'll understand it's true. But now it's just making an assertion. It's a nice topic. Microevolution. One devotee, I'm going to end with this. We'll cover the other remaining verses another time. One devotee, I know, is his field is microbiology. So in his PhD stage, he had to do graduate teaching assistant, and he had to teach evolution. Or the the fact that you can create bacteria in a petri dish, and then you can introduce something, and then the antidote for the bacteria evolves. It's not there, it just evolves. So microevolution. You with me? And in the course of one semester, it happens. You can demonstrate. So he wanted to know, what should I do? So we're not speaking against microevolution, but complexity of life doesn't come about through evolution, chemical evolution. You have to teach what the curriculum tells you to teach. But you don't have to go the next step and say, and therefore, life is evolution, chemical evolution. I don't know if you've ever had discussion with people that believe in evolution. It's like an uncomfortable conversation. They say, there's evidence. But the evidence is the microevolution evidence, not evidence that life evolved from chemicals. Once there's life, there's the bacteria, that's life. And if the bacteria life can develop antibacterial capacities that didn't have before. Some bacteria get killed off and some survive. Survival of the fittest, right? So it's a modification, so there it's proved. It's not proved by microevolution. Anyway, not so long ago, at a university, it was in Singapore, that gave a presentation on meditation. And afterwards, kindly, the person didn't bring this up during the group discussion, but he came up afterwards and said, I'm a PhD, an Indian fellow, I'm a PhD in artificial intelligence. And I have a question for you. Is intelligence the same as the soul? So having some idea of where he was coming from, I said, well, intelligence is an instrument and the soul is the driver. And so through artificial intelligence, you can replicate what souls may do. But without the soul, the intelligence can't do anything. It's the animating force. This was this example of the soul is conscious and consciousness. So his thing was intelligence is consciousness. Are they not the same? And I said, they're not the same. Consciousness guides or energizes intelligence. And without consciousness, you don't have anything. It's the basis and support of everything. And, you know, he made a couple of arguments and then, like, left, like, unhappy. Because I was supposed to say, yeah, artificial intelligence is the same as consciousness. So we just eliminated the idea that false notion that there's a soul. And there's an Indian fellow. And he was there attending, you know, a bhakti yoga club gathering. But he had this other mindset. You know, his life is dedicated, you know, to going down a dark alley. You know, getting paid to make robots that have artificial intelligence principles operating. No problem. But it's not consciousness without an operator of the robot. You can make a science fiction, you know, 2001, where whatever that computer is, HAL or something.
Yeah,
HAL. HAL. It's just like he's a person. He's not a person without the person behind, because you can dismantle HAL and, you know, then you have a person dismantle him as much as the person that creates him. You have to have a person that pushes the button. Without consciousness, artificial intelligence is nowhere. And computer technology is nowhere. As Prabhupada, sorry to get into all this, but a very famous event is Prabhupada's being invited to MIT, which was, during the time he was present, super renowned for its investing billions of dollars and so much time and energy of brilliant people in artificial intelligence. Big. So Prabhupada's opening question is, where is that branch of knowledge in MIT that says the difference between a living entity that's alive and one that's not alive? What's the difference between life and death? Artificial intelligence. Because without life, artificial intelligence is dead matter. You have a robot without a person animating the robot. Dead matter. What's the difference? Where is that institution in all of this big place? And he would say the same thing. I happen to know because I joined the Boston Temple and heard that celebrated story. But he would challenge it in other places, the same thing. We are the only institution that is teaching the difference. No, there may be others that are notionally teaching the difference. But on this descending knowledge coming from the Vedas, just as Brahma received, he's giving the resource to others. Well, it's stated right in the conclusion of this chapter. The first Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, another one of the 12 Mahajans, directly from the body of Brahma. Any discussion? It's a challenge a little bit to make kind of this technical stuff interesting. But it is interesting. Yeah?
I have a question about Lord Brahma.
About?
Lord Brahma.
Okay.
I'm assuming he's the same Lord Brahma that stole the cows of Krishna. That's the Lord Brahma of our universe. And I'm wondering if that's the same Brahma of our universe that had the boon to take birth as Haridas Thakur. And if Haridas Thakur is his kind of Rajasarup, is he Brahma that stole the cows in Krishna Leela, or does he have a different like relationship with Krishna? Or I'm trying to understand that.
Well, it's easier to say something. But the honest answer is, I don't know. Because from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Navadvipa Dham Mahatmya, the indication is, yes. But is it the Brahma of this universe? It's the Brahma that stole the calves and cowherd boys. That one. But is it this universe? Because when it gets into questions like that, there can be all kinds of possibilities. And I could, you know, intuitively, logically, reasonably, yes. I don't know. Probably. A little stronger. Likely. But there's, these things get really, like, diverse. So I'm just giving an honest answer. Yeah, like it's easy to say yeah. But the real answer is, I don't know. The Brahma of our universe, to go a little step further, the Brahma of our universe is the same Brahma that spoke, because Prabhupada speaks like this, that's Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma. And that Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma, has a relationship with Krishna as the eternal maidservant. Yeah, straight in Brahma Samhita. Just the verse just before the prayers begin, eternal maidservant. He got an inclination, not the detail, eternal maidservant. That's the Brahma of our universe. Is it the same Brahma of our universe that became Haridas Thakur? Likely. But then the Brahma that's spoken of in Canto 2, Srimad Bhagavatam, is a different Brahma because his relationship is friendship. When he had this vision of Lord Vishnu stood and extended his hand. Howdy, brother. How's it going? Glad to see you. Been a long time. Friendship. Different rasas. Different brahmas. Different universes. And how do we know any of these things? Except for authoritative sources. It's the best to be careful rather than, yeah, same Brahma. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for discussing the intricacies of artificial intelligence. I had a conversation 2 years ago, maybe, with somebody at U of M who's really into this, one of the main professors there in their department.
A professor of AI.
Yeah. Mm. And I shared with him a concern that I have that the modern definition of what is intelligence among the social body is declining, and the capacity of the robots is increasing, and so they'll become a harmonizing point, and that will be when they declare that artificial intelligence has matched ours. But it will really be because our definition of actual intelligence has degraded as Kali Yuga continues. So it was something that he chewed on a little bit, and what I was thinking during your discussion was, how can we maintain a definition of intelligence that is beyond the capacity of a robot?
Well, to know who you are. Does a robot know who he is? You know, we don't have, we've lost the capacity to know who we are has weakened.
Yes.
It's not foreign to the soul in the human form of life, it's the intention. Knowledge doesn't just mean information, because artificial intelligence has a lot to do with information processing, which is really the mind, not intelligence. Information processing is the mind. not the intelligence. But the intelligence has become degraded to that. And the information processing cannot process to understand who you are. At best, it can understand who you're not. At best. That's impersonal. Definition by negation. Who are you? Real intelligence is to know who you are. And people are too busy to even ask the question. So it's material intelligence that's manipulating information. Information technology. Anyone else? Yes.
More like in the beginning you said that I'm just trying to get like practical, you know, application of like knowing the creation.
Knowing the creation.
Yeah, so like in the beginning you said like it's to like, you know, revive our original consciousness, our original consciousness, you know, that's
the purpose of the Vedas. In general, including the topic of creation.
And then, you know, also we hear in Narada's past life, you know, like he also went into forest and observed all these, you know, different living entities and all the natural. So, like, how, like, you know, we can apply, like, you know, just like this creation, looking at creation, like, to improve our origin of consciousness.
How can we, is your question? Well, it starts with an inquisitive spirit combined with hearing from Vedic sources in disciplic succession. That's how to. Otherwise, we can just get, you know, distracted. Real easy to get distracted. Seeing stuff in nature. But to connect that stuff we see in nature with the inquisitive spirit wanting to know what's the source of all this, and then hearing from the Vedas, Vedic wisdom, that tells us what the source of everything is. So, appreciating, for example, appreciating the variegatedness of species of life. One of the things that I, from time to time, they don't do this anymore, don't have time, but I would take a look at National Geographic magazine because they have all these like high resolution images of species of life. They go, wow. Look at that one. Especially aquatic life. You know, ooh, boy. How amazing is Krishna? What a sense of humor. You know, and the male and female are attracted to each other so they can create more. And, you know, look at this one, look at that one, my goodness. What a sense of humor. So, if the I want to know light is on, and the connecting to the wisdom in disciplic succession of the Vedas, then it's beautiful. And then, in contrast, look at what modern intelligence is doing to that which is beautiful. Very sad. In the name of what? Enjoyment. Or expanding our knowledge. You know, killing rats and unconscionable things. Not respecting life. totally non-Vedic, totally not for the purpose of elevation of consciousness. Slaughtering of animals because, taste. And, thinking nothing about it. Anyway.
Then the other part of it is human form of life can, develop this origin consciousness. What's the, purpose of, lower species, is it,
prison. Misuse of free will? Prison. I just like adding to this your question. Some of you are aware that we held a retreat of some sorts for college students, and maybe 50% of the persons that attended knew nothing. It was just like a Facebook advertisement, and they wanted a break and go to a farm, and sounded interesting, so they paid. And they came. And several of the students, one of the activities was some service. And they were so absorbed in their services, like raking and milking and stuff. They wanted to skip the Sangha group thing of relationship building because they were just like, we like this too much. And I don't know how many, but it was reported to me that several persons having direct contact with cows have vowed, I'm going to be vegetarian. Just from being with cows. Ooh. As opposed to something abstract. Every time I go by, McDonald's or one of those places and see the line of cars, their intelligence is gone. They have no sensibility. And it's like... Oops, 8:15. Well then, Srila Prabhupada ki.